Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dallas Hoops Fancast, a podcast for Mavs fans. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm here with my co-host, Martin.
Hey, guys.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Dallas Hoops Cast. I'm at underscore Sydney Myers. Martin is at Martin L. Myers. Remember, you can listen to new episodes and read exclusive articles at DallasHoopsCast.com, where you can also read the latest breaking news from the most popular Mavs blogs. We have a good show today that I'm kind of excited about because we have a lot of fun segments planned. We're going to talk about the Atlanta Hawks game officiating controversy. So since it's officiating, I thought it'd be a good opportunity to do good call, bad call.
All right.
Right. Okay. Then we're going to do real or fake league leaders edition. And then in between that, we're going to do listener questions. So we got some questions from Twitter. I posted on there to get some questions from our listeners. So we're going to answer those in this episode. But first, I want to share our thoughts on the Spurs game. It just ended. The Mavs beat the Spurs 109-103. This was a really good win because they got a clutch win. And it was it was a close game. The Mavericks had a pretty significant lead for a lot of the game, but the Spurs came back and actually took a 1-point lead, I think, in the last five minutes.
Yeah.
And as soon as it hit 5 minutes and the game was within one point, I was like, crap. But the Mavericks played really well down the stretch.
For the most part, yeah. I think they had that 12-0 run there in crunch time, and it was really the Porzingis and Luka show during that stretch. So that was really encouraging to see. That's kind of what you hope to see when you had Porzingis and Luka, that they would have that kind of connection to where in crunch time both of them are superstar type players where they hit shots when you need them the most. And I think you saw that with that run. It was a weird game. I didn't feel very comfortable, even when we kept building the lead in the first half. At one point, I think it went all the way up to 19. But the Spurs just never went away. They kept playing really hard.
The Spurs.
So I give them credit for that. But it started getting me nervous when the fourth quarter hit, and immediately in the fourth, they made it a single-digit game.
Yeah.
And we were just rolling this lineup out there. That even in the first half, the JJ, DeLon, Kid Gilchrist, Maxi, and I don't remember who the fifth one was, but it was not working. It is just not a good lineup. In the first half, it didn't work. And in that fourth quarter, it wasn't working.
Yeah, I thought, so the two big highlights for me were, actually there was three highlights. Their clutch performance. And then also, I thought their ball movement in this game was really good. And that kind of played out in the clutch situations, too. There was a lineup out there that didn't really work. It was like what you said with DeLon. And those guys, they play well, but for some reason, that lineup just wasn't working tonight.
In some games, it does.
Yeah.
It just wasn't tonight.
Yeah, but I thought there were like two or three examples of really good ball movement where, like, Luka would drive it, or they would post up Porzingis and he would kick it out. And instead of the first guy taking the shot, he would pass it on. And then even they would pass it on again. And usually the Mavs, like, they'll pass it out and then it's Luka and he'll take the shot or he'll drive it. Or if he makes the extra pass, then it's, you know, Seth Curry and he shoots it. But they made the extra pass, mm-hmm. and it led to some beautiful ball movement and some just excellent shots. And that kind of ball movement, it just creates this rhythm of movement where that the final shot is so much in rhythm. It's so perfect that you rarely miss that mm-hmm. shot. And that happened a few times. It happened in crunch time. I thought their ball movement in crunch time was really good. And then also, obviously, Luka was excellent.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
Oh, no, that was it.
I thought Luka really needs to learn from this game because mm-hmm. he really wasn't playing well. He wasn't.
He forced some shots.
He shot 25 times.
Yeah,
and he was 10 for 25.
He was 3 for 11 on threes, and I thought he forced a lot of those threes.
And Porzingis was 8 for 14. He was shooting a high percentage, 4 of 8 from 3. He had 28 points on 14 shots.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Luka had 26 points on 25 shots. And I just thought that there was too many stretches in the game where he was forcing it and not playing that beautiful ball movement that we saw. You know, we've seen them where Luka doesn't necessarily have to force the shot, and then it turns into some beautiful play with Curry hitting a wide open corner three in crunch time. And I think that's really the recipe for the Mavs. And I thought Luka had just too many stretches. He didn't do it the entire game. He also had some good stretches where the ball movement was great, but he had a lot of times where he was forcing it. And it wasn't necessary because Porzingis was playing really well.
Okay, so I want to address this topic because we've said it more than once now how Luka forces shots or sometimes he doesn't utilize his teammates. And that's a negative critique of Luka. Do you think we're being too hard on him? Do you think that's a fair critique?
Yeah, I think he would say the same thing. He has said the same things. Okay. I think he's still learning. Now, he's going from year one where literally he was the only guy.
Yeah.
And for the majority of this season when Porzingis was struggling, he was the only guy.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden he has to change his mindset where you got Curry and Hardaway who are also both – Curry's a pretty good playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And Hardaway's been a pretty efficient player for the Mavericks this year. And Porzingis now in the last month of the season – is back to old Porzingis, and he has to change his style again.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a product of being 20 years old. And I don't think... Almost 21, yeah. And I think that's why you don't see Porzingis fighting too much about it or complaining too much because he's a little bit more mature. Not saying that Doncic is immature, but Porzingis has been in the league for a while.
Yeah.
But I think Luka needs to learn from it. And he's had some games where he did, but then he has some games where he reverts back to one-man show when it's not necessary.
So, okay, I'll say two things. I think it's a delicate balance because the fact is he is their best player. He's one of the best players in the league.
Yes.
Yeah, so, like, really, he can dominate the game, and you want him to dominate the game, and that's how you're going to win a lot of games. So I think it's a balance between just that, you want him to dominate, but also not forcing shots.
Well, I think there's times where you recognize that Porzingis, he's got it going.
Yeah.
Or Hardaway's got it going, or Curry's got it going. And when they have it going, then you might want to keep going back to him. And I thought in the fourth quarter, in the crunch time, in the clutch moments, Porzingis had it going. Porzingis was the guy. He had six straight points. The very next possession, Luka comes down, and Porzingis gets good position in the post. And he had a small on him. I felt like that was a perfect opportunity to go right back to Porzingis.
Mm.
But he did a step back three. Now he made it.
Yeah.
Because he's a big time player.
Yeah.
But I just feel like that's an opportunity where if it's not your night and he's kind of leading the offense, just throw it right back down to him. Let him. You don't have to do it every night. It's not going to, your stats are going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know.
So, what I was thinking, okay, this my counter to that would be in crunch time, that's the time when I do want him to take over. I never want him to force it, but that's when I do want him to be I'm the alpha. I'm going to bring this home for us.
Well, you're right, but the luxury of having another superstar on the team.
Yeah, is that you don't have
to. If it's not going for you, you have another guy that can carry the offense.
But, it was going for him by that time.
In all honesty, he had about four or five, at least, drives to the lane that were a miss, but clearly were fouls.
Fouls, yeah.
I mean, absolutely, clearly were foul calls. And if you take those five shots off of his percentage here and turn those into free throws, it's a completely different game.
Yeah.
He wasn't getting those calls tonight, and they turned out to count as a miss for him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it is a delicate balance. I think also, like you said, last year he was the only guy that could do a lot of the scoring. And this year he's played without Porzingis, Simon. And he's never played with a superstar like Porzingis. I mean, I would even go back to his EuroLeague days. Not that I know, I will openly admit that I know nothing about EuroLeague and his,
except the highlights.
Yeah, and his teammates there. But I feel comfortable in saying that he's never played with a guy that's at the level of Kristaps. Yeah. And so adjusting to that and, you know, knowing when to take over and when to not, that's...
The season has evolved so much.
Yeah.
And for them to learn all of these things all at once, like I said, Porzingis wasn't Porzingis for the majority of the season.
Yeah.
The last 15 games, he's been Porzingis, but Luka has missed a lot of those games.
Mm-hmm.
And now Porzingis is a star again. And Luka, like, now you have to learn how to play with this Porzingis, because it was a different Porzingis he had to learn to play with earlier in the season.
Yeah,
so,
true.
I mean, it's a learning process. Don't get me wrong. Luka is hands down my favorite player. But I think he still has some things to learn. And I think a veteran point guard of a team would have recognized, you know, that Porzingis kind of has it going tonight. He's carrying the team. Let's run through him. There's no shame in that. In fact, it's actually very a good thing to do,
yeah,
to put that trust in Porzingis. Now, the good thing is Porzingis isn't going to flip out because he understands Doncic is 20.
Yeah, I thought in the first quarter to start the game, Luka did a really good job of getting everybody involved, which I think is that is a learning thing. I know other superstars and Hall of Famers, they've talked about how they had to learn, like, look, I know I can get my shot whenever I want, mm-hmm, but these other guys can't, whether because they're not the point guard or because they're just not as good as me. And so it's better to get them involved and get them going first, because I know that I can turn it on whenever I want to. And so I thought Luka did a good job of getting the team going and getting everyone else going. And then he started kind of taking over as the game went on.
Yeah. I do think also his ankle is bothering him.
Yeah.
Because
and now his thumb too.
Yeah. He doesn't have that same explosiveness. He's not creating the same type of separation. He doesn't have the same kind of lift on his little crafty layups, however he goes in. He's not moving as well as he was earlier in the season. And quite honestly, they're just beating. You saw his face in this game. He had a giant scratch on the left side of his face. His thumb was nearly broken in half twice. And he's just not getting the whistle.
Yeah, so we can move on. But I just wanted to address that because we bring it up a lot in games, because whenever we're recapping a game and we're talking about things we noticed, that's generally a thing that we noticed, mm-hmm, like, you know, how well did the team play and how did Luka get people involved. So, like, when we talk about that, it's not like we're starting to turn on Luka he's a problem now or something, but it's just something that I noticed that I think he will grow at.
Well, we've been watching basketball for a long time. And
yeah,
you
we're
can
pretty much
see,
basketball geniuses.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying we've seen a right play and a wrong play.
Yeah.
And from time to time, he doesn't make the right play. Yeah. Now, 99% of the time, he does. And without Luka, they're, you know what? I'm not going to defend.
I don't think
we need to defend that.
No. I'm just saying, like, it's not like we're harping on it. It's just like, yeah, we're recapping in the game, and that's something that I noticed. You talked about the officiating. I mean, I don't want to go on like a whole rant thing, because I feel like it's so cliche at this point. Like,
well, look, it's a real problem.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't the cliche of the officiating sucks. Who were these guys?
I don't know.
Who these were part of the family members that were hired on, because I've never seen them before.
We had a goaltending call that was reviewed, and then we got a jump ball at center court.
The goaltending call was wrong. It hit the backboard.
Yeah. But they said it wasn't goaltending because it didn't have a chance to go in, even if they hadn't.
Okay, fine. I'll give them that one. And then we had a jump ball because that's the right play. But these guys, like, it was so inconsistent.
Yeah.
You can see the Spurs were absolutely frustrated. They got two technical fouls. The Mavericks were absolutely irritated.
It was bad on both sides.
I tweeted, it is literally, I can't think of a worse officiated game.
I don't know if it was that bad.
It was one of the worst officiated. Oh. You would have Luka drive the lane, hacked all over the place, a lot of contact, nothing. The other side down the court, nothing, no contact, barely any touching on the arm or whatever.
Yeah.
And they'd blow the whistle. And it's like, why, you know, it's literally more contact than we just saw. And I'm not saying this was just a Mavericks thing. This was for both teams.
Yeah.
It was inconsistent. It was just terribly officiated.
Well, and that was the thing. Like, it was inconsistent. Like, you would have contact that, you know, coincidentally, the same sort of contact would happen on both ends of the court. Yes. Like, the plays would look almost identical. And on one end, it would be a foul. On the other end, it wouldn't. And yeah. And that went both ways sometimes. Or sometimes a guy would flop and they would call it. And then sometimes a guy would flop and they wouldn't call. And it would be like the same kind of thing. It was just really inconsistent.
And you mentioned when we were watching the game, the Mavericks got the ball and they were on a fast break.
Yeah.
And the ref called a technical foul. And you were like, you know what? A veteran ref would have recognized, let that play complete before I call the technical foul. But these guys were sitting on their lawn last week. I mean, seriously, I'd never seen them before. And they're out here officiating an NBA game.
I know. It's like every game, it's a new
guy. It's like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was a whole
crew.
And
I don't remember it ever being that. Like, no. I remember in the past knowing the names of referees. And, and we would, and they would talk about, this is who's the officials tonight, because everyone knew who they were. And they were like, okay, this is the kind of game we could expect. We had stats. This year, it's like, I don't know who any of these guys are.
And you can see the refs are not confident in their decision making because so many calls are late. Like, they allow it to happen and then they blow they're not confident in what they're seeing. So they're second guessing themselves. Yeah. They're blowing the whistle when they really shouldn't be. Then they'll blow it late after the play is complete and the other team got the ball. And it's like, they didn't know what they were doing out there. And it was hurting the overall product of the game.
Yeah. So we're going to talk more about the officiating later on in our good call, bad call segment, because we get into the Hawks game. But yeah, it was inconsistent in this game and it's been a problem. But I was happy that they got a clutch win, and I thought it was like a really solid clutch win. It wasn't like the other team just happened to get back and then they crumbled after that, or there was crazy calls or whatever. Like, the Mavs, they played well. I thought their defense in the last 5 minutes was great. Their ball movement, again, like we said, was great. Luka hit some pretty sick shots. Porzingis played well. It was a solid clutch win, and it looked different from other games, the way that they've played in the clutch. So I don't know if there was a different scheme or maybe just mentally they were different, but whatever it was, like, that they should do more of.
They looked well. Now, the Spurs are not a very good team.
Right,
so
true.
But overall, they hit shots. Now, the problem is they're missing their freaking free throws.
Yeah.
In the fourth quarter, it's like, it's guaranteed you're just going to miss. If I'm the opposing team, I just intentionally fouled Tim Hardaway Jr. in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
No, I thought they played well in the clutch. I thought that they executed their offensive game plan. I thought that it was a pretty hostile environment, and they blew a big lead.
The crowd was into it.
They were going nuts, and they just blew a big lead. They easily could have crumbled and went away, but they fought back, and they fought through it, and I thought they played well. And again, it helps when you have two stars who can hit the shots that you need at those kind of moments, and tonight that's what you saw happen.
Also, Luka Doncic had a triple-double, 26 points, 10 rebounds, 14 assists, 1 steal, 7 turnovers. That's not good, but he had his triple-double. That's 21 before he turns 21, so he is by far the leader in triple-doubles before turning 21.
He already was by far, yeah.
Yeah, and now he has tied Jason Kidd for the most triple-doubles in franchise history ever by a player.
He's going to destroy that record.
Well, I mean, another one, and he already has a record, and it's his second season. Yeah. So it's pretty crazy. I mean, honestly, we haven't like had an episode where we gush over Luka. In the beginning of the season, it was every game because he was
averaging 30, 10, and 10.
Yeah, in November. Yeah, he averaged a triple-double. But ever since then, he's doing the same. Like, his numbers haven't gone down, but it's so routine now.
But this game, you say it's a bad game, and he had 26, 10, and 14. Yeah, he didn't shoot very well, and he had some turnovers. But overall, the dude took over the game and ran the show really well. So
Porzingis had 28 points and 12 rebounds, 3 blocks, 2 steals. He
was awesome.
He's back. And then Dorian, man, Dorian hit a huge three. I think it was
done that a couple times this year.
Yeah, he's become a big time shooter. This was right after the Spurs took a 1-point lead for the first time since like 2-0 in the first quarter.
Yeah,
and the Mavs came down. I think it was at this point, and Dorian caught it in the corner, shot it, and it was like. There was so much confidence. You could tell when he shot it, he knew it was in. I mean, he just stood and marveled at his work, and it was just beautiful. And he's had a lot of big shots like that. That was one development, like him becoming a good shooter, you know, obviously practice and all that, but him becoming a big time shooter.
Can you make him when you need him?
That's unexpected. Curry was, he didn't play very well, 7 points, but he was plus 22. And then, yeah, the bench was all right. So, but it was a good game, good clutch win. Any other thoughts on it?
Nope.
All right, cool. We're going to move on to the rest of our segments. Let us know what you guys thought of the win. You can send us a message on Twitter after you listen to the podcast. Let's get on to our other segments. Okay, so let's do the good call, bad call, talking about the Atlanta Hawks game, officiating controversy. You probably know exactly what we're talking about. It's the goaltend call at the end of the game. It was ruled a bad, or it was just overturned, basically. But then they called it an inadvertent whistle. It should have been a jump. Well, the Mavs say it should have been a jump goal. Like, you know what it is. And also, I do want to point out the Athletics Mavericks podcast. They talked about it in their recent episode, and it's a very detailed breakdown of the play and the rules and their kind of take on what could happen. I would definitely encourage you guys to listen to that, but we're going to do a good call, bad call, and go through each point, like each step of this, and see what we think. Was it a good call or was it a bad call? So first, just what started all of this was the Mavs sat out Luka and Porzingis. And that's a hot topic because the result of the game. Do you think that was a good call or a bad call?
You know, I've honestly gone back and forth on that because I get with them, it technically wasn't load management. It was more injury management. And both of them have had injuries this year. So I think I'm okay with that decision. But you essentially punted the game.
Yeah.
And then we want to complain that we didn't win the game.
Yeah.
So.
And that's, I got to that conclusion. I posted this on Twitter. It was something that it forced me to think about the other side of it. Like what you said, the Mavs sat out their two stars. So that gives the impression that this game isn't a priority. Now, obviously you want to win every game, but it shows that it's not a priority. So,
well, I think it would more show that they felt like they could win without them too, without Luka and Porzingis. And they felt that this was a good opportunity to get them some rest without playing them on the second night of a back-to-back, but still have a really high percentage chance
of winning,
to win the game. And so obviously they were frustrated that they didn't win the game. If you played Luka and Porzingis, even for 10 minutes, I think you blow the game open, it's over.
Yeah, so my thought was that gave the impression that the game wasn't a priority. But now that they lost because of the officiating, somehow the loss now matters. Like, if the game mattered that much, then plays a guy. So that's kind of where I got to. But then I heard Luka talking about his ankle, and he said that it actually is still bothering him. Like, he's trying to keep the swelling down. Whereas I initially thought they sat him out just because, like, it had happened before, and so they were like, well, let's just be super careful. But the ankle actually is still a problem, like, right now. So once I found that out, I was like, okay, that I get it now. Like, they sat them out for a good reason. Like, they really should have sat them out. And it sucks the way everything ended up, but they really did need to sit them out. And so now I'm not so torn on that, you know, because at first I was like, well, if the game mattered, play your stars. Like, it just doesn't matter now just because you didn't like the way it turned out, you know. So now I get it. And so I think it was a good call.
Yeah. And I think it would be different if it wasn't injury management. Like, if it was strictly just load management. mm-hmm. which we've seen from numerous players yeah. this season, not so much with the Mavericks, but just across the NBA. If that were the case, then to me, don't complain about it because you clearly weren't that interested in winning the game.
Yeah. So Cuban was doing a radio show and he talked about, he said that he thinks they have a really good chance to win case.
I heard that.
Yeah. But I thought it was interesting. So they were like, well, what do you think will happen if you do win? And he said, honestly, what we'll probably tell them is that if it doesn't affect the standings, we don't care to replay it. And I was like, okay, so why did see so that I think the protest, which actually we maybe should wait until another point, but okay. I thought that was interesting. I'll hold that. So after the game, Mark Cuban went on a tirade on Twitter on doing interviews, talking to journalists. I mean, he was like dropping names of guys within the organization, referees and trainers that were causing this problem. So good call, bad call. What do you think?
Absolutely a good call. I think he wanted to bring attention to it. And if you listen to that radio show that he was on, mm-hmm. he said that he was trying over and over to handle it behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah.
And he kept bringing footage to the NBA. He kept talking about, you know, what's happening, what he sees. And they kept saying, we're going to fix it. It's going to be better. It's going to be better. But this year, I don't remember much from season to season. I don't remember how bad it was last year, but I know this year in particular, the officiating overall, mm-hmm. even when we go and watch a neutral game and we see the calls, we're like, that is just a terrible call. So it's not really that much a bias. And this is a complaint that a lot of teams have.
Yeah.
The overall officiating of the league. And we were talking the other day about it. I think we went from like 2009 to 2015, great officiating. And the finals were masterfully done.
Yeah.
They were really, really well officiated playoffs and finals. But then all of a sudden this year, and then we learn about all the new people they have, 20% or 17 something of the 52 are brand new.
I feel like every game I'm like, who the heck is that yes. guy?
and what kind of call was that? You know, every yeah. time it's like, what in the heck?
Yeah.
You know, you didn't call it on that side, but on this side, it's ticky-tack.
Yeah, it's inconsistent to me. Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of, you know, everyone knows about the Portland call against Rudy Gobert, the goaltending. Yeah. And I think that happened another time with Rudy Gobert this season. And not to pick on Gobert, but I mean, like, obviously that was a really bad call. And it's these, like, it's those kinds of calls that, yeah, I know these guys aren't perfect. They make mistakes just like players miss shots or turn the ball over. But it's bad calls that are more along the lines of, like, there's something else going on here. Either favoritism or you just really don't know what – you're just not good at this.
When you take that Lakers call, that the goaltending that was clearly
– yeah.
Clearly not a goaltend.
Even, yeah.
It was not even close. They reviewed it.
They did review it?
Oh, I thought they had to.
I don't know. I remember they called it, and then LeBron was arguing it, and at some point it got turned. Yeah, they changed the call. I don't know if they reviewed it or not.
I was under the impression they reviewed it.
If
like, how did you?
They didn't review it. Yes. That's even worse.
But even if you didn't, it was the most obvious goaltending call ever. And you know, it's like it's stuff like that. You know, that is happening this year. I do feel like the refs show favoritism to physical teams. If you have a reputation for being a physical defensive team, then you mm-hmm. get away with whatever you want on the defensive yeah. end. Or if you have a reputation for being a soft player, then you never get foul calls because it just seems like everything you do yeah. is being soft. So, or if you're a superstar, automatic, the call's not going to go your, it's going to go your way.
Yeah. So I agree with you. I think it was fine and a good call. But there was one, I want to say it was a coach or a GM. I'm thinking it was Pat Riley, but I'm not sure. It was an exec within the NBA, and he said that he didn't think it was a good idea because the NBA likes to promote the idea that they're not perfect, but that, you know, it's an elite organization, that everybody is well-trained, that they do things the right way, that they're always growing and getting better. They're trying to promote that image. And so when Cuban says all this stuff, that's like that really turns them off and they really don't like that. And so
well, then
he
fix
thought
the
it
problem.
Would backfire.
Yeah,
well, yeah.
Just fix the
I mean,
problem.
That's
I mean,
the obvious
if
solution.
How many times does it have to an issue have to be brought up privately before it is escalated.
Yeah.
You know, and if he truly did what he said he did, where he would over and over and over would bring it up privately, show film, all the things that he felt it was necessary to do, and there was no change, there was no movement and no progress, at what point does he make it public? Yeah. And now that it is public, you see that every team across the league has felt the same way, because you started hearing reports about, and that's one of the great things about Twitter, one of the very few, is that you start to hear other fan bases having the same exact complaints.
Yeah, my only concern is that the referees are going to take it out on the Mavs, on the players.
Like they did in 2006. That's essentially what happened.
Yeah.
Because Cuban spent 5 years after he bought the team complaining and ripping the refs and publicly shaming them. And obviously in the finals, they were like, okay, well, here you go, Wade.
Yeah. So like I liked it, you know, as a fan. I like, you know, yeah, take him down, but I'm also worried of the repercussions. Yeah. And
good thing is we're not going to win the championship this year.
True.
Hopefully next year it'll all blow over.
Yeah. Okay, next, the Mavs filed a protest. Good call, bad call.
I mean, if they don't actually want to replay it, I think again it's more of a protest, more of to keep the focus on the officiating, because if they didn't do the protest, ESPN's already forgotten about it.
Yeah.
But now when they do the protest in 2 weeks, when the protest comes back, whether the results are good or not in the Mavs' favor,
they'll be talking about
it. It's back on the public stage.
Yeah, I also think it's more about making a statement. Here's a question. Do you think they would have done it if the Rockets hadn't filed a protest earlier this year?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard. I know there was a protest in 2008 that was overturned. I don't know if it was a protest or just the league decided to replay it.
It was a protest.
But I don't even remember it.
Yeah, so, I know. Like, that's the crazy
and
thing.
And we've been watching it, you know, since 2002, watching every single game across the league. And I was like, oh, I didn't even know that happened. I feel like I would have known.
It was it was like 07 or 08 maybe. It was
08.
It was the Lakers, Heat,
yes,
and some other team, and they inadvertently said that Shaq fouled out when he didn't, and so they protested and they won because obviously, and so they replayed the final like I don't know minute or something. The weird thing was that Shaq had been traded before by the time they replayed the game, so he wasn't even in the game, and I was like, I feel like they should have let him come back because that's
that
the whole point.
Game,
but the Heat actually ended up winning that game.
But I would say no because I think the Rockets reminded the league that this is possible.
Yeah.
Because I didn't even know it.
Yeah. So I think it was a good call. There is part of me that was a little embarrassed as a Mavs fan, like, oh, really? We're doing that, like the Rockets thing. But at the same time, it's
completely different.
Yeah, it was kind of a problem. It was the last 10 seconds. It's not like they had 20 minutes to make up the lost points or the jump ball or whatever. So I'm like, you know, I get it, and you know, we'll let them sort it out.
Yeah, and if the Rockets, if that Harden dunk happened in the last minute of the game and they didn't count it, then I would say they have every right to replay that. But the fact is it happened with like 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth. They were up by like 15 or what. I don't remember the exact. I know they were up by double digits.
Yeah.
And so that was different. Like, it was clearly a bad call, but, you know, I think this is just different situation.
Yeah. Okay, last, the league is waiting until the results of the protest come back before deciding whether or not to fine Cuban. Good call or bad call?
Oh, that's what they said they're going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's a good call because what if you gave him a $500,000 fine and then you came back, oh, by the way, you were right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so at least this way they can say yay or nay and then issue the fine. And if he was right and they say Cuban... Well, they're not going to say Cuban was justified in the public beratement of...
Well, that's the other question. Do you think even if they win the protest, will he still be fined?
I think he's going to get fined, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, hands down, easy.
Like I said, he dropped names.
Yeah.
Like,
It was a legit public shaming.
Now, Damian Lillard earlier, again, with the Jazz and Blazers game, he also was very public and very clear and angry and said all kinds of things. He didn't name names, but he kind of went on a tirade too, and he wasn't fined.
Yeah.
It might be different because Cuban is an owner. Maybe they expect a higher level of behavior. I don't know. And also because he named
And Lillard, there was no debate that he was right.
True.
Like the call was bad all around. And so I think they just gave him a free pass.
Yeah.
Essentially. But I don't think Cuban gets that.
We get it. Yeah.
I don't think Cuban gets that pass.
And I think also it does matter that Lillard was just angry. He just talked about the call and that. Whereas Cuban went up against the whole organization.
I've been quiet for 3 years now. You know?
I mean, he went up against the whole thing, the whole machine. So,
but you know, if what he says is true, then there is some serious problems.
Yeah.
Because you can't have a lack of training. And I thought, and one thing he said that I thought about myself when he talked about Joey Crawford and Bennett Salvatore, how they got these management roles.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, you took a skill of being a good referee and put them in a management role, which requires a completely different skill, and just assumed they'd be great at it because they were good referees. And that's 100% true. Like, it's two completely different skills.
Yeah.
Just because now he can be a, you know, somebody that you asked for advice. Or whatever, but for them to be leading a consultant. Yeah, thank you. That my mind had left me there. You know, but to think that they're automatically going to be great managers.
And trainers.
Yeah. It's just not the right thinking. And so I think Cuban is 100% right on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's so true. And when he said that, I was like, that is such a great point. Because, I mean, anybody that's listening, you probably see that in your job where somebody might be really skilled at writing or designing or whatever it is. But that doesn't mean that they're a good manager.
Nope.
They could be trained to do that. But the point is, that doesn't mean they have those skills. And he talked about how some of the guys that have been put in charge, they would hire their friends or like people that they knew from their hometown or that, you know, worked together in school or something. And maybe
just can't do that.
Like, it's possible that you could do that and that person is actually qualified, but the odds are slim.
Okay. Well, is that not the number one sign? They're not a good manager.
Yeah.
Because
you don't
as
hire
a manager,
your friends.
As a manager, you have to think of the business needs.
Yeah.
More than your personal needs. And sometimes managers ruin friendships that they work with because now they have to have a completely different mindset. So for you to think that you're going to be successful in your role because you hired a friend of yours,
no,
then you're missing the whole point. So again, that's further proof that maybe Cuban had a point there.
Yeah. You can't be friends with the people that you manage. It's just not, can't. Yeah. Okay. So this is how the protest works. Once it's been filed, which it has been, the two teams have to give their side of it, give any evidence regarding the issue within 5 days. And then after that, the commissioner has 5 days to make a decision. And it's Adam Silver alone. Like, he might, you know, ask for thoughts or advice, but it's his decision. So we'll know within 5 days, I guess, what happens. So that's that. Good call, bad call. Let's move on now to some listener questions that we got from Twitter. I've been wanting to do this for a while. We did it like several episodes back, and it was a lot of fun. So some of our listeners from Twitter sent in questions, and this could be about, or I said it could be about anything, so basketball related or the show or us or whatever. So we got some pretty good questions. The first one is from Jacob Hernandez at D. Wheeler. He asked, if you could bring back one ex-Maverick to play with our current team in replacement of Justin Jackson, who would you choose? And the player can be active, still in the league, or retired.
Well, the obvious question would be...
The obvious answer would be... Okay, so let's say besides Dirk.
Okay. Well, again, I would take anybody from the championship team.
Okay.
But my pick would be Matt Carroll.
Why Matt Carroll?
Huge improvement over Justin Jackson.
Wow.
Insurmountable. Matt Carroll is my pick.
Okay. Okay. So my initial thought was kind of along the same lines of anybody from the championship team. My initial thought was Tyson Chandler, because I think that he fits really well with this team. Now I like what they're doing right now with the five out offense. But even when they had Dwight Powell running a lot of pick and rolls, I think Tyson would have filled in that perfectly.
Let's not overanalyze this.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, okay, so mine would have been Tyson Chandler. But I also think any of the guys from the 80s teams.
Okay.
Just because, you know, that was a really good team. I mean, those guys.
Let's keep focused.
Okay, so I'm just saying, Rolando Blackman, Mark Aguirre, Derek Harper.
Yeah.
Any one of them, I think. Yeah, Brad Davis deserved to win a ring. I mean, they were so good.
Yep.
So I don't know which one because.
Well, it'd be Mark Aguirre because he would play the, I guess four in terms of today's fit, league.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question is from Fabian Frey. I like that name. I don't know if it's real, but if it is, I like it. At FS248, which sounds like a droid from Star Wars or something. Okay. Should the Mavs rather rest their players like the Clippers do and not care so much about playoff seeding, or should they try to win as many games as possible and play their best players every night like the Lakers do?
Well, I think if it's injury related, you should rest.
Right. But that's normal.
Yeah.
You know.
I think they definitely 100% need to win every game and try to win every game. Develop a winning atmosphere. You don't want to create an atmosphere for a 20-year-old and a 24-year-old that winning isn't really that important in the regular season. So definitely they should try to win every game and not worry about rest. Only sit people if they require injury management.
Would this include the recent Hawks game where Luka's ankle was bothering him? We don't know how bad it was. Say he could have played on it. Would it include that? Would you still sit him?
Yeah, I think because, in all honesty, you did have a high percentage chance of winning that game without Luka. Yeah. And if you have a chance to injury manage him and Porzingis, then you should have.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's kind of hard to answer because we don't know how bad it was, the ankle. But so my answer would be, as a fan, like, obviously I want them to play every night and I want them to try to win every game because it's more fun to watch. You know, it's not fun to watch a game against the Hawks when Luka and Porzingis don't play, just as a fan.
It was miserable.
Yeah, you know, you can look at it in terms of basketball analysis, and it's still basketball, and I get that, and there's a lot to take away from it. But as a fan, like, it's fun to see the stars play. So my natural reaction is I want them to try to win every game. But I'm kind of like you. I get it. They need to manage injuries sometimes, and so that means sitting games. But I don't mean go on that other end of the spectrum where they sit them every other game. I think, you know, like the Lakers, they play every game. If they're hurt, they don't play. Or if they need to, you know, fix an ankle or whatever, they don't play. But for the most part, they play their guys just like teams have done for the past 50 years.
And there's only one team that does what they do with Kawhi, and that's whatever team Kawhi's on.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody else really sits their stars just to sit them for 20 games in a season.
So I think that was a clear answer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This is from LD77 fan, good listener, loyal listener of the show, at LD77 fan. I think this question is for you because he responded to both of us, but then he specifically tagged you.
Oh, okay.
He said, at Martin L. Myers, where do you rank Kobe all time?
Oof. he's obviously in top 10.
Yeah.
Maybe top 5. Obviously, I still have Jordan number 1 overall.
Yeah.
I do believe LeBron deserves to be in the top 5, obviously, and people would be like, what do you mean top? Of course top 5. Yes, okay. I think Kobe's in there. So top 5. Top 5. I'd have to dig into it to decide what order of the top 5, but
yeah.
I would have him top 5.
I'm going to answer it too, even though
I think you're allowed to.
So I actually made a top 10 greatest players of all time video like several years ago.
It was before he had played seven seasons after that.
Not so. Seven, because it would have been in 2015 or 16 probably. I don't know he retired.
Yeah.
And I put him 10th all time. So it's not like any of those guys have played that would change that ranking, except for maybe LeBron, because I don't think he was in my top 10 yet. So I don't know. I mean, maybe now I would go back and reevaluate it and see like, okay, you know what? These things mattered more than I gave him credit for. I don't know.
Let's make him number 8.
Marty.
Okay.
That was so beautiful.
Kobe's number 8.
That was so beautiful. All time,
he's number 8.
Marty.
Okay, let's not cry over
You have such a special heart. Stop.
Let's move on, please. Okay. All right.
Next, Mavs Overreaction Podcast. Good pod. I listened to it, actually. At Podcast Mavs. Here's a question. What inspired y'all to record a podcast?
Well, one, they don't get much airtime on the radio.
Oh, yeah. That was...
Every segment.
Yeah.
Is Cowboys.
Cowboys.
Every...
And or then, Rangers.
Yeah.
And then Stars. And
the
then...
The Mavericks would never get airtime.
Yeah.
It would be one segment in a whole show. They would talk, and all they would say is, Luka's so awesome. Luka's so awesome.
Like, yeah.
They would never have any analysis. They would never have any breakdown of the game. Oh, dude, Luka's awesome. And we'd have a whole segment about that. So that was... One.
That was the big thing.
Yeah.
It's just we couldn't get enough Mavs content. And back then, there weren't a lot of Mavs podcasts. Now there's a lot of them, which is awesome because...
Stealing all our listeners. No,
there's plenty of Mavs fans to go around. But yeah, it's great because you can get as much Mavs content as you want. But back then, there weren't like a whole lot of them. And so... You know, we decided to start one. Now, since there are so many, I don't know if we would have started one because we would have just listened to those. Yeah, and we would have just listened to them. But at the time, there weren't enough. So we were like, well, we'll just start one.
Yeah, and basically that's how I, on my drive to work, if the new Mavericks podcasts have all updated, I just play them and listen to them instead of listening to the radio.
Yeah. Okay. Alexis at Mavs 4141X. Question. Oh, this I can answer this one. What happened to mixtape videos and thoughts on a Bradley Beal? I know. And thoughts on a Bradley Beal or Buddy Hield trade for next year. So I used to have a YouTube channel called Mixtape Videos. I started in like 2015 and I did NBA breakdowns, like top 10s, player comparisons, things like that. And it was a lot of fun and we had a great audience. It grew to like over 100,000 subscribers. But I stopped doing it because it was kind of part of our source of income. And if you keep up with YouTube creators, you know that copyright is sort of a problem. And YouTube's copyright system is really just, it's kind of in its infancy. I feel like it has a long way to go.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah. And so it's not that it... Well, it's kind of horrible right now, but only because it has so much it can improve on. It's like a little baby still. There's so much they can do better. Anyway, so the problem was I felt like I was doing enough with these short clips to make sure that it was fair use. I inserted graphs and text and charts and photos and, you know, little clips, but I would still get flagged. And then when you get flagged, even if you win your appeal, you still lose all that revenue for the month that it takes for your appeal to go through, and you don't get the revenue back. So since it was a source of income for us, it just wasn't sustainable, so I had to stop doing it. The channel actually still exists. It's run by another guy that I was working with at the time. He was going to college for filmmaking, so I was like, this would be a cool thing, you know, whatever you want to do with it. So it's still out there, and I think he posts videos every once in a while, so you can go check it out. And all my old videos are still there too. But anyway, that's what happened to that. I'll let you answer the second part of that question since I just talked for 5 minutes. Thoughts on a Bradley Beal or Buddy Hield trade for next year?
Yeah, I'm not sold on Bradley Beal. I love Bradley Beal. On Buddy Hield.
Yeah.
I think Buddy Hield is a great shooter, and I think he can put up buckets and a lot of buckets in a short amount of time, but I don't think he is conducive to winning or is a winning player. And that's really like, I don't want that to sound really bad.
Yeah.
I don't have anything against him. I just don't want him.
Okay. No offense, but yes. I don't want you.
Now, people will say, but Bradley Beal's team sucks. That is true. His team is terrible. And I mean, his team is absolutely atrocious. I think Bradley Beal is a better all player overall. He's a better scorer. He's not just a 3-point shooter.
So Buddy Hield is averaging 20 points on 43% shooting, almost 39% from three.
Mm-hmm. But he got benched.
Yeah, well, I disagree with that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of players that can put up 20 points.
I mean, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal.
I bet you, without knowing 100% for certainty, if you did a deep analysis of his advanced analytics,
yeah,
I bet you he would be terrible.
His PER is 16.2. Win shares per 48 minutes, 0.074. So I'll compare that to Bradley Beal.
I guess so, yeah.
Okay. Bradley Beal, and I'll just do the same thing, PER. And this is just this year. It's not like for his career. PER for Bradley Beal is 22.8, Buddy Hield was 16.
Yeah.
And then win shares per 48 minutes, Beal is 0.114. Again, Hield was 0.074.
Yeah, and I don't think there's a question that Bradley Beal is better than Buddy Hield.
Yeah, but just like
Buddy
to
Hield.
Give you context of those numbers.
Yeah, I think Beal, if the Mavericks can get Bradley Beal, they absolutely have to.
And
he would be
a
perfect
fit
next
to
Luka. He's basically Tim Hardaway Jr., but just better. He's a better playmaker. So yeah, I would take Beal. I don't know what they would be able to trade to get him.
Okay. I would like to have Bradley Beal, Buddy Hield. I think at this point you might as well just keep Hardaway. I think he's
essentially the same guy.
Okay, next question from Brent Edmondson at Brent Edmondson One, another good listener. He asked a lot of questions, so I'm going to pick out like maybe one or two. First, how many minutes should Michael Kidd-Gilchrist get?
Not much. Again, like I've said before, I think he is a situational player. I think a lot of people feel that way. I heard that, I don't remember what podcast they were talking about it, and I'm definitely on the same page with that. I think he's a situational player.
Hmm. Oh, you were talking about how, like, if they face the Clippers,
yes,
they're going to need a lot of wing defenders.
Exactly. But, you know, injuries maybe.
Or even the Rockets.
I mean, I definitely think he should get Justin Jackson's minutes.
Oh, yeah.
I think you can probably just stop playing Justin Jackson altogether. I mean, in all honesty, like, just stop playing him and just let Kidd-Gilchrist. Let him just the last 20 games of the season or so, just give him all the minutes in the world. Yeah. See what you got in him.
I mean, I think, like you said, taking Justin Jackson's minutes, that makes sense. And that
automatically
would be,
it's already a win.
Yeah, that'd be probably like 10 per game. Okay, one other question from him. Do you think Willie Cauley-Stein and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist will be part of the team next year?
Probably Kidd-Gilchrist has a better chance than Cauley-Stein.
Yeah, Cauley-Stein doesn't really even play.
And
he's been out for personal reasons, but before that.
But once Porzingis decided that playing the five was fine and it wasn't like somebody was going to die if he played the five, because that's how some of these players feel, like, I don't want to play. Like Anthony Davis, like his family's going to be murdered if he plays the five. Like it's serious.
It's a disgrace.
And once Porzingis realized, hey, I can play the five and people still like me, you know, and once he realized he liked it, I don't think there's a need for Cauley-Stein all that much or that kind of player.
I agree. Yes.
Cool.
Next question from Sensei Lee.
Yes.
At underscore Sensei Lee. If you lived in Germany like me, would you watch the games in the morning without knowing how it ends, or would you look the result up?
Do not look it up.
Just watch it.
If it's recorded, I don't know how they do commercial breaks in Germany, but you can fast forward all the timeouts and the halftime, and the game is only 48 minutes.
That's true.
So if you can just hold off.
Well, that's if you have a DVR or YouTube TV.
Well, I'm assuming they have that.
Does it, everybody
I don't
a
know
DVR?
What time the game would play early morning.
I don't know. It just says that it's in the morning.
We're American, so we don't know how the rest of the world
We don't
world
know a
works.
Lot about the rest of the world.
Forgive us,
There's
please.
There's no other country that
But
matters.
I would say if you can hold off on seeing the score and watch the game in real time, there's so much more enjoyment from that.
Yes, I,
And thank you for listening, by the way.
From Germany,
I mean, we have a...
That's super cool.
We have a, I don't even know what to say. We have somebody in Europe that listens to our podcast.
We actually
thank
have a
you.
Lot of listeners from Europe and the Philippines.
I think we have now, if we count all of our listeners, we have 8. Just
no,
kidding.
No, we have like 10. Gosh. Okay. These are all of our listeners that sent us questions.
Well, we love you and we'll keep doing it.
All right. With the West, this is from Louise Olivares at Rudy the Misfit. With the West pretty wide open this year, will the Mavs regret not going after Iguodala to have some veteran presence? And will Brunson somehow turn into a third-year, third-round pick next year? Not third-round, second-round pick? Third-year, second... Will Brunson somehow turn into a third-year, second-round pick next year? Well, he will be a third-year, second-round pick. So I feel like...
So he's
that's an inevitability.
Is Brunson basically going to be a part of this team?
Is he going to be like a legit player? Okay. Yeah, yeah. So first of all, will the Mavs regret not getting Iguodala for veteran presence?
I don't think so, because I don't think their plan this year was to win the championship.
Obviously.
So yeah, I mean, so I think that's that. I don't think they're going to regret that. Now it's possible they surprise teams in the West and they make it all the way to the Western Conference Finals, and all they needed was that one defender to guard LeBron.
But
you know. Who knows? They would obviously regret it then, but I think they're okay with the team they have right now.
And Brunson.
I don't know how I feel about Brunson. He has some moments where he's spectacular, and he looks like a starting point guard in the league. Then he has some moments that it's like, dude, what are you doing?
Where's your head
yes,
at?
Yeah. And I don't really know how I feel about Brunson. I think ultimately Brunson's going to be a rotational player in the league for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of how good he was in college, the guy can clearly play.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ever going to get that opportunity here in Dallas because of Luka.
Yeah, but as a backup point guard, yes. I mean, I think he's probably, that's probably what he expected his career mm-hmm. to be, a backup point guard. Yeah, and Brunson, it's his second year, so the ups and downs, I think, are totally normal. If this were his fifth year, it'd be different.
He wouldn't be playing.
Yeah, but for his second year, yeah, the mental lapses he has are frustrating, but I'm like, it's a second year, so it's expected.
I think Brunson, though, is a big-time shot maker.
Yeah, I
think
I agree.
Even if he's not a star on a team, I think if he is given the shot late in a game, mm-hmm. he's going to drain it. And that's the kind of player I think he is. So I think you should try to keep him and see if he ever develops.
Okay, last question from Luka Doncic O at Dirty Doncic Show. Yeah. Okay, I want to answer this question.
Okay.
Do you think Powell going down was better in the long run for this year by moving Porzingis to the five quicker and getting him and Luka more experience, particularly KP rolling rather than popping? So this is obviously a sensitive thing, because you never want to say like, yeah, Powell going down was great. Like, I do not feel that way at all. I think that the unintended consequence of that, where Porzingis has to play the five and they play a five out offense, I think they've managed that really well. And I think that it's working pretty well for them. I would rather Powell not get injured, especially that kind of injury. It's just terrible for a player to go through that. But I think they've adjusted well to it. And they've been able to be effective with their new offense. All right, so those are the listener questions that we got. Thanks for everyone who submitted a question. And if we do this in the future, I'll tweet about it. You guys can send in more questions. Or if you have one that we didn't get to here or that you forgot to send, just send us on Twitter @_SydneyMyers, @MartinLMyers. Let's go to our last segment, Real or Fake League Leaders Edition. This one's going to be fun, okay? So I'm going to give you the name of a Mavs player and a stat in which he is possibly leading the league in. And you have to guess if it's real or fake. Is he actually ranked
okay.
in this spot? Okay. First, Luka. Oh, also, these numbers are current as of yesterday. So, don't fact check me. All right.
Yeah, because that's what I do.
Well, I meant the listeners. Okay.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking to me.
Okay. First, Luka is top 10 in the league in total points scored.
I would say no, because of the amount of games he's missed.
Interesting. You're wrong.
Okay.
He is 10th.
Oh, so I'm kind of right.
He scored 1,324 points. That's before the Spurs game. Mm-hmm. So he's 10th. All right. Off to a good start. Next one. Tim Hardaway Jr. is top 15 in three-pointers made. Total three-pointers made.
Definitely.
Yeah, he's 12th. I don't know why that was surprising to me.
No, I thought he'd be higher.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's 12th, 155.
Yeah, no, he's been money this year.
Yeah, he's a good 3-point shooter. Yeah. Okay. Good redemption there, because I got that one wrong, or I would have gotten it wrong. Next, Luka is one of 3 players to be top 10 in both double doubles and triple doubles.
Ooh, I would say yes.
Okay. You're wrong, but you're partially
right.
Don't
make it so specific where it's like, oh, well, if it's that specific, it must be true.
Well, that's these stats, like, you know, the stats nowadays are very specific.
So explain to me how I am partially right.
So he is top 10 in both double doubles and triple doubles, but there are more than 3 players.
Oh, that's a trick. Trick question.
Here's the players that are top 10 in both. LeBron, Luka, Jokic, Ben Simmons, Domantas Sabonis, Giannis, and Bam Adebayo.
Yeah, but a lot of these players, because they may have 1 or 2 triple doubles and just have a lot of double doubles, because Luka leads the league. He's tied for league leader in triple doubles. He has 12.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know.
Well, regardless, you're wrong.
All right. Well, I'm right.
No.
All right.
That's not how it works. Next. This is a good one. JJ Barea has made more than 90% of his free throws this season.
Has he even shot a free throw?
Yes, he has.
I'm going to say no.
Okay, you're wrong.
Again. I said no-ish.
Well, you're still wrong.
As in, yes.
Okay. He's made 100% of his free throws. He's 16 for 16. Yeah, so you were
wrong. He's made both of his free throws.
He doesn't qualify for the league leaders, mm-hmm. but he's made all of them. All right, next one. DeLon Wright is top 10 in and-one frequency from isolation plays.
Who would know this? I'm going to say... Yes, because I don't know how you would find that particular stat without it being true.
NBAstats.com. They have
But you had to
so
search
much.
That specific one. So yes, my answer is yes.
No.
Oh my God.
He's 18th. Yeah, so he's not top 10. He's 18th. That's in the percentage of plays that results in an isolation. You know, when he's the one isolating.
Yeah.
So he's 18th at 6.9%. Number one is Isaac Bonga. Bonga?
Okay, let's not spend 20 minutes.
At 21.4%. Number two is Zion Williamson at 18.2%. So he's not actually even close to those guys, but he's in the he's top 20. Okay, next. Kristaps is top 10 in total blocks, not per game, total blocks.
I want to say no, because he missed 10 games. If he's number 10, I'm right.
He's not.
Okay.
He's number 9.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's number 9 in total blocks. So top 10 in total blocks. That's pretty good.
I think overall, I mean, was pretty successful the games, with this.
It's not over yet.
Oh, well, okay. So far.
Next, Tim Hardaway Jr. is top 15 in total plus minus. This isn't not per game. It's total plus minus, which I don't even know is a thing.
I'm going to say yes, because Carlisle is a master at manipulating plus minus.
Yes.
Okay.
He is. He's 11th in the league in total plus minus. Now, per game, he's 21st.
Mm-hmm.
But still, 21 out of everybody. That's pretty good. Okay, next. Kristaps is top 10 in clutch field goal percentage.
I think he's got like 2 clutch shots. So if he's 50%, I'm going to say yes.
You're wrong.
Okay. You're so happy about that.
I don't know why that delights me so much. You know what it is? It's because we argue all the time over who's right and wrong. And in this case, you are definitely wrong.
To be fair, you already know the answers.
I always know the answer.
Oh my
you just
God.
Don't agree with
oh
me.
My God. This is what I live with. Okay. I have sympathy for all the husbands and boyfriends
quiet.
Out there. Okay.
Quiet. You're wrong.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So, Kristaps is not top 10 in clutch field goal percentage.
Then why'd you ask?
He is actually 6th worst. in clutch.
He's got like three clutch shots.
He's 6 for 28.
28?
Yeah, 21.4%.
When were these shots? Because I feel like Luka has shot every single clutch basket.
No, he's 6 for 28. He's sixth worst in the league.
Good thing is, it can only go up.
That's true. Mostly. I mean, I don't mean it as like a way to bash. It's room for improvement. You know, that's all.
Yeah, it's a positive
way. Okay. Next, Luka is top 10 in defensive rebounds per game.
I believe that is true.
Yes.
Okay, thank God.
You're right, Marty. He averages 8.2 defensive rebounds per game. It makes sense because he's like top 10 in rebounding or something. Okay, next. Last one. Luka is top 10 in loose balls recovered per game.
Who tracks these things?
It's on NBA stats.
I'm going to say yes because Luka is really good with his balls.
he's a good hustler when going for the loose ball.
Yes.
So you're saying he is top 10. You're wrong.
Okay. Why'd you ask? Okay. Why did you ask? And it's such a random stat.
Well, I had to find things that...
I got things to do.
So I had to find things that Mavs players were potentially top 10 in, which, to be honest with you, was not like...
Anything.
A whole lot. Yeah. He's 26th. He recovers 1.3 loose balls per game. Now, number one, I don't know who it was, but he recovers 1.9. So it's not like he's way off, you know. But anyway, so that was Real or Fake League Leaders Edition. I think you failed. I'm pretty sure you lost that game. It wasn't rigged. You just lost. You're just not good enough. But that's it for the show. Thank you to everyone that sent in your questions. We'll try to do that again. Thank you for listening. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Dallas Hoopscast, @_Sydney Myers, @MartinelMyers. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating or a review. That helps the show grow. DallasHoopscast.com, new episodes. Follow, subscribe.
I think they've stopped listening by
now. Thank you guys so much for listening.
You could literally say anything you want and no one would catch it.
Ooh, what should I do with that much power?
I have to go. I actually have to go help your dad move something. So I need to end
this. Thank you guys so much for listening and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.